This edition of the Packet Pushers podcast is brought to you by Network Faculty, the multi-vendor training library, bite-sized IT training videos on demand. If you want to learn real networking, Network Faculty can help. Visit networkfaculty.com and sign up today. Welcome to Packet Pushers, a data networking podcast. On this show, we talk about what's going on in the data networking industry. If you're a network engineer, you work with Cisco gear or perhaps Juniper gear or any one of a number of fine networking vendors and make their equipment do something cool, then by golly, you've come to the right place. We are the folks that talk about that kind of stuff. So today on the show, we've got three guys who've been on the show several times before, I think. Petr Lapukov, Ivan Pepelniak, Russ White. And with us, of course, is Greg. Now, Greg, the last time we chatted with you, your throat was healing up. And I must say, you're sounding a bit better, if not fully recovered.
Yes, I would like to thank the power of science for painkillers for sponsoring my last 7 days. Thank God for that. Yes, I had some throat surgery because I was suffering from what I call the rich man's disease of snoring. And I went in to have some elective surgery to get it treated because I have a particular version of snoring which can be treated by surgery. And so I had to take a week off in a lot of pain. I don't recommend it for everybody, but he's hoping that it solves my problem. But I'm still been at least another 2 or 3 weeks before I'll be back to full talking capacity, I believe. Because I can't eat, because it's all the muscles are damaged. I can't speak properly. This is the first day I've been able to speak for 8 days. And I haven't had a coffee since last Wednesday because I can't drink anything hot.
Now that hurts.
I must say, if I had some sort of surgery that forced me to not eat, maybe that'd be the best thing for me right about now. Well, let's introduce the other guys that have come on the podcast today. And Russ, why don't you introduce yourself quickly and tell folks who you are and what you do.
Russ White, Routing Geek. Right now I'm working for BCE and I don't know, just doing data center stuff and, whatever. Finishing up a book, Ethan, you'll be happy to know the book is almost done.
Almost done. Ah, promises, promises. We shall see how that goes.
Maybe I'll actually be able to blog, you know.
Yeah, that would be cool. Yeah. Then, of course, Ivan Pepelniak has been on the show many, many times, and good to have you back, sir. How are you doing?
Pretty good, thank you. I was hoping to celebrate the cold front passing by, and it hasn't arrived yet, so I'm waiting for it. Awfully hot over here.
You're home right now, then?
Yes.
Yeah. Home, which is Slovenia, for those that that don't follow even that closely. Very good to have you on the show. And then, last but not least, Petr Lapukov has joined. And why don't you introduce yourself and then introduce our topic today, because you brought this to our attention as something that might make a good podcast.
Uh-huh. Thank you, Ethan. So my name is Russian name is Pyotr, but I go by Peter. It's easier for everybody to call me this way. So currently, I work for Microsoft. I'm a network engineer, mostly focused on data centers here, mostly at web-scale data centers for Bing, Azure, and other stuff. And the topic of today's discussion is what we call BGP SDN. This is one of the approaches we have here to control routing in data centers using a centralized agent. So it's called SDN for the sake of popularity. But I would rather prefer to call it like centralized routing and not SDN, but we can talk about this.
Is this related in any way to the I2RS IETF draft or unrelated?
Well, not really. I2RS has much bigger, broader scope. It's mostly, it's a slightly lower level, I would say, because it's an attempt to control the routing tables from centralized agent. And this BGP SDN is mostly a special application of BGP that allows you to have centralized routing control and a very simple abstraction for a northbound API to control routing in the data center.
And it works today.
It works today, surprisingly. And it's really, really simple to implement. We'll probably discuss this, but in Python, it's about less than 2,000 lines of actual code to implement the controller.
Now, why don't you give us some background on BGP in the context of running it in a data center? Because I think a lot of folks really think of BGP as really a service provider protocol. At least a lot of the enterprise guys that would be listening to this show might think of it that way. So describe a little more context here.
Right. So a few years ago, we started working on design for data centers, something which is would be routable. And let's say, of course, we look at OSPF, ISIS, traditional stuff. Back then, the problem was mostly that, let's say, OSPF had some issues on some other platforms, and we tried to mix multiple vendors in data center for the sake of cost minimization, all this stuff. So we turned down to a few other options. ISIS wasn't a choice because nobody supported in data center gear. BGP was there and everyone's switch vendor. So we tried a few things and we came up with a design that allows you to do routing in a pretty large data center up to, let's say, 100 or 200,000 servers, which translates into maybe a few thousand switches in data center, using BGP only, a single protocol, and having a special bonus, I would say, where you can use BGP to inject routing information at every device from a central agent. So this was one of the criteria to make use of BGP. And we published an IETF draft that outlines this design in pretty much details. The key idea there is that you basically use BGP as a distance vector protocol where you isolate device or set of devices in BGP ISN, and your data center network looks like a collection of small ASNs. The underlying topology is, of course, well, the class or a fat tree, as people call it right now. But the whole routing is done using BGP only. That was the story, and it's been actually operational for over 2 years now. And we had no major incidents. Well, it was one, but it was kind of very specific. So it's been pretty successful and working pretty reliably. And I would say operationally, it has been proven to be quite easy to support and, of course, automate. So we've been pretty happy with so far.
So, Petr, you actually are using BGP very much the way I2RS would envision using a controller, right? In other words, you know, what you're actually doing is you're reaching out and using BGP as a protocol to install things in the local routing table and using a layer 3 to the Tor. So it's effectively kind of offline path computation, but instead of using something like MPLS-TE, you're actually just using BGP as your control protocol. So it's very similar to the goal of I2RS, whether or not it's actually...
I totally agree. It is pretty similar. It's, let's say, less generic, right? It's very BGP-centric. Of course, it has less functions, theoretically, but it allows you to achieve one simple goal, to control routing, right, only. Of course, not as fancy. So you can control multicast easily with this stuff, but we don't need multicast, so nobody's complaining. But as you said, the goals pretty much overlap. It's a centralized control of routing information in the network. Speaking of I2RS or OpenFlow or any VR protocols, the idea is that you get some sort of reasonably low-level abstraction where it can install frozen entries in the device and you get some feedback, let's say link down, link up from a device, and maybe in case of OpenFlow, you also get the data packets. You can get them if you want. In our case, we tried to fix on a simple abstraction to describe a topology of a network. And the abstraction was try to build a link state map of a network in the controller memory using BGP only to discover the topology information dynamically and responding to link events, links going up and down, devices rebooting and all this stuff using BGP only.
So basically the difference is you don't have a direct API into the routing table to see link changes. And by the same token, rather than installing a 5-tuple that can control based on the flows based on the entire IP header, you're only able to do destination based with the BGP solution.
Correct.
Yeah.
Of course, you can use in theory, BGP flows back, right?
Yeah. To do all five tuples, yeah.
Right.
But supported it's by one vendor only.
Yes. And not in DC gear so far. Well, Juniper has, let's say, Switch that can do this stuff, but it's only Juniper. That's it.
Yeah, of course.
By the way, just out of curiosity, are you running IPv4 only data center or are you running dual stack?
Well, actually, I'm dual stack. So it's pretty much parallel implementations, right? Separate sessions for BGP v6 and v4 to avoid any shared fate between protocols. There are some, let's say, the majority of issues with IPv6 is, let's say, vendor implementations of forwarding and issues they have there sometimes. And the capacity of forwarding tables on the commodity switches, which are often very unimpressive.
Physically, you're running just basically a class or a spine and leaf design, right?
Right. Of course, it's the same stuff everyone kind of does since 80s. Whatever we call it, leaf spine, fat tree, class, or anything, it's just trying to create a very large, let's say, logical switch by breaking up into multiple small boxes. And this huge mesh of wires is actually the main challenge in these designs, to be honest. It's physical implementation of these topologies. It gets a little bit tricky sometimes for very large implementations.
Mm-hmm. Right, which is why everybody wants short-range 100 meg or 100 gig so you can actually get fat tree designs and reduce your cabling a good bit. But we don't know how the IEEE is going to work out on that right now.
Yeah, 100 gig, it's... same as 40 gig. It's a long story. It's probably like 2 hour shows to talk about. But 40 gigs, 100 gig stories.
So the point of the draft here, I mean, you've taken BGP's native capabilities. It doesn't sound like you've extended BGP as a protocol, but you're just leveraging the capabilities that are already baked into it. And then the draft is defining a northbound API that allows you to write into BGP.
Right. So let's put it this way. You mentioned the draft document, which is a separate draft document I'm working on to define the BGP SDN idea. I prefer not to call it BGP SDN, but people just like this name. And so the draft defines
it's how... It's cool. It's hot. You know? It's all this those... The
way to rush. Is it cool or is it hot?
It's all those things.
Oh, yes. I prefer calling it like centralized routing control, which makes much more sense. At least it kind of something you can visualize. The draft defines how we can use BGP to do health detection, say link health detection, and build the link state map, and then defines how you actually represent the network to the third-party applications as a collection of multiple topologies, right? And how you can then map prefixes to different topologies, change link costs, and then push this down to the network.
What you're basically doing is you're doing what we would call a past state vector overlay on top of the ASs,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you're using a route server to push everything to the edge boxes.
Yes, Russ, you have this paper, right, on the map overlays?
Yeah.
But unfortunately, so this one was requiring some small changes to BGP. And we know people don't like changes to BGP in general. Even for good, right? Try this at ITF. It's always fun to add a new attribute. but anyways, right. So we tried to create this staff overlay, but not in distributed fashion and in centralized fashion, where you have the agent that builds this link state database of a network, the actual link state database, and then presents a multiple topology view of this database to the client applications. And let's say, then you can say, okay, let's take this ring topology and clone and create new topology, which has a cost of this link set to, say, 1,000 as opposed to 1, and map some prefixes to this topology. So very much like in MSTP, for example, multiple span tree protocol, or most topology OSPF or whatever, ISIS, BGP, you create new topologies in the controller, only in the controller. You map the prefixes and you change the metrics. And this, of course, results in the SPF runs, new path computations, and then controller pushes them down using BGP. And BGP, in this sense, works as a just like I2RS or OpenFlow implementation pushing down the forward information.
You've given IGP capabilities to BGP. You know, BGP can't do all the things that this controller application can do, but it can provide the mechanism to get routes, populate routes into forwarding tables.
Correct. So in this sense, the difference is, as opposed to using distributed decisions in BGP, we centralize the decision logic in the controller and then push it down over BGP sessions, right? I would say the key difference is that BGP is still working underneath a controller. You still pass the prefixes, pick up best paths, and propagate them. Controller only overrides some prefixes. Let's say if the decision that BGP makes and controller makes are the same, then controller detects this and doesn't push down the information because there is no need to. And the best part of this approach is that if you suspect there's something wrong in your controller, you shut it down, and things go back to normal using BGP. This operational story was the best thing for us, because if you transition to, say, theoretically an open flow and something breaks badly, there is no way you can recover quickly, like, say, in 5 minutes. So the ability to use BGP in band in addition to the overlay protocol is a great story for operational folks. Because everyone freaks out when they say, okay, let's go open flow, right? People are like, oh, not going to happen. It's too insane, right?
So let's get more specific about what you're actually doing with the controller. The controller is what running what sort of software?
So controller it's basically a BGP speaker, right? Or BGP, let's say, route reflector. Not actual route reflector, BGP route server, to be more accurate.
Okay, sure.
Which peers to all devices that's using IBGP. All devices in your network, just like OpenFlow agent will peer to all devices using OpenFlow channel.
So you're using IBGP.
So IBGP, yes. Right now, you can use eBGP, of course. There are some subtle differences in implementation. Mm-hmm. It's just currently in IBGP, some things are easier than eBGP.
Yeah, you don't care about next hops, for example.
Yes. So specifically, let's say you may directly inject a prefix local preference of some high value to do overrides.
Yeah, that as well. Yeah.
Yes. Always third party stuff.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you get the internal BGP policy capabilities instead of just the eBGP ones.
Mm-hmm. But overall, you can actually do this stuff with both.
And then you set no export and you limit the prefix to one hop.
Yes.
Yay, cool.
So yes, the simple BGP mechanics, right? Let's say the idea is you treat the BGP ASN as a logical router, single logical router, which you control from the centralized agent. Okay, so now you peer all devices. So what's next? Somehow you need to discover all the connections between devices, or let's say in this case, between BGP ASNs. The controller injects special prefixes in the network, and they flow down. They flow across the network and bounce back to controller. And simply by virtue of this fact, you may kind of deduce that the link between A and B is up if a prefix which comes to A pops back via B. It's a very simple, like a control ping operation, right? But unlike open flow approach, we have to run, for example, LLDP probes for every device. You inject this once and it's kind of stateful. As long as BGP session is up, you won't get any events back. Once the BGP
That's cool. Yeah, yes. You're right.
that's a good thing about using BGP, because the stateful protocol, which keeps kind of reflects the link health, if a link between A and B fails, session goes down, you receive a withdraw for your prefix. And this tells you, okay, this link is down. And this translates into very simple operations. Link up, link down, which comes back to your controller, and this guy in turn builds the link state map based on these very simple operations.
Yeah, with ISIS or OSPF, you'd actually have to be watching the neighbor state to see that.
Uh-huh. Yes, in our case, we kind of afford this to BGP. So that's a nice property of this approach, is that you're hybrid. You let BGP handle this in-band stuff like link health detection using keep alives or a fast fall over or whatever. And you only care about the events which come back from the network, right?
So you don't care what's in the network. You could use BFD. You could use whatever.
Uh-huh, exactly.
And then the moment the BGP session fails, you get a withdrawal, which is probably even faster than SNMP link trap.
Mm-hmm. And you see, the nice thing, once again, you, of course, can use like SNMP to discover link states, really, right? Not a problem. But the nice thing, you have only one protocol doing all the heavy lifting for you, right? Mm-hmm. So this translates in a very extremely simple code on the controller side, which consists of two parts. First one is a BGP server, route server. And currently, I play with XABGP, which is very nicely written. It's in Python, so it's really easy to play with and modify and just change things around. And then the actual back-end controller that receives the BGP messages from the XABGP and parses them and translates them and creates this link state abstraction in memory. And the last piece is the simple API. It's basically a RESTful implementation where you can tell the controller to change the link cost in this topology or map prefix X to topology Y, for example. And controller then does all the logic, recalculates the paths, and pushes down the decision to a network. I would say probably the biggest benefit I see here is a very simple abstraction to the northbound applications. As opposed to having some, let's say, a low-level view of a network you may get, you have a very extremely simple API. Extremely simple in the sense that it's most topology implementation or view of a network, which people are more or less used to because, well, it's been done before. And it's a link state view, so you have a full network state at your disposal at once. And you can make decisions pretty much like you've done before. Let's say if you're familiar with changing costs in OSPF, it's pretty much the same here.
So effectively, as long as you're happy with destination-only routing, you can do whatever you wish.
Mm-hmm. And if you really wanted to do a lot of playing around with flow spec, you could go farther than that if you just had that grand desire.
Of course. But let's talk about use cases, right? Because the first thing about use cases is that the result of being said in SDN communities, it's not like you really need this stuff quite often. And in most cases, the same things could be achieved using the traditional methods. In our case, especially in the web scale data centers, the simplicity of a network is such that often you don't even need to make any changes. So we sit down once, like, okay, what do we really need from a network? And do we really need this? And the first one was, okay, we may want to drain traffic from devices for maintenance purposes. So before the box reload, you can move traffic off. In many cases, it's actually not even needed. Let's say for a search engine, losing one device on the network is almost unnoticeable. But there are some other applications which I kind of care about this. So being able to drain traffic from a device easily and consistently is a nice thing to have.
I always dislike it when people say, well, I can already do that with something else. Because, yeah, you can. In fact, I could run my entire network on tin can and strings, right, if I really wanted to. But the question is never, can I do it? It's the amount of management and complexity involved in doing it that way. And if I can find a new way to manage my control plane that makes my complexity level go way down, well, you know, I'm a happy camper. That's much better than doing this hack and that hack and putting this policy here and, you know, writing some script that goes in over there. If I can make it much easier, then I've made it much easier. I just don't buy the whole, well, we can already do all that argument personally.
That's true in many respects. Although quite often, if you have a system in place which is doing some stuff, right, people are often just resistant to change it.
Yeah. I wanted to add exactly that to Russ, to your comment, which is so many people are just kind of weary of all the new things that are coming up in networking because a lot of engineers look at networking and the protocols that they've already had to learn to get to where they are. And they're like, oh, geez, I don't want to learn one more thing. What is this new thing? And then when they figure out or believe that they can do it some way with something they already know, that's all they want to hear. That's all they want to know. Moving on, I don't care about this new thing because I've already got a tool in my toolbox that can do that. And they just don't want to hear anymore. It's too much to have to think about with all everything else that's going on.
To be honest, it's not like, you know, it's the devil you know. It's the thing where you know how to troubleshoot it. You know how to avoid the bugs. You know that it's been running for 5 years and it's stable. Versus deploying something totally new where you have no experience. You don't know how good the support is. You don't know how many bugs you hit.
Other than if it's new, you're probably going to hit some.
Oh, yeah, but now let's back up.
Just to jump on a hobby horse there, isn't that embarrassing that we don't trust our vendors enough to produce bug-free code?
Oh shit! Sorry.
Let's back up though, right?
You poked the sleeping bear.
Yeah. I mean, the reason that we're so gun shy about bringing in new technologies is because the history of introducing new technologies into networking hasn't been good. Right. And a lot of these protocols that we've used are so complicated and so got so many nooks and crannies and levers and special knobs and power buttons and, you know, magic switches where shit happens, you know, that it does take years to get them accepted and proven. And our vendors are so poor at producing good quality code in the first pass. Maybe it's because the routing protocols are so complicated or whatever. We have a problem in networking. And I know because I've been sitting across the table for the last 6 months with cloud teams, with networking and storage and servers. And networking is the butt of many jokes because we can't, you know, we aren't able to introduce new stuff with any level of confidence.
Yeah, but two answers to that. First of all, BGP isn't new. So it's a beautiful thing what Petter has done here because you it's not new, right? I mean, it's the same thing. You know what you're doing pretty much as far as a protocol goes. The second thing is my answer to a network engineer who says, oh, but it's all new and I have to learn a new protocol is, look, stick with it long enough and all the protocols start to look the same. So you're not really learning.
Yeah, everything looks in place.
Just if you think it's a new protocol, you just haven't been around very long. I'm sorry.
It is fair to call this SDN, even if SDN is becoming the most overused buzzword. It's as bad as something or another as a service. It's as bad as, you know, cloud. It's software defined everything now. Oh, so I understand, you know, shying away from it in that context. But I mean, in fairness, it really is, a classic example of SDN with a controller that learns a global topology and then can inject some sort of a change into the network based on that aggregate knowledge that he's got.
Maybe it should be called BGP as a service.
Yeah, there you go. In the cloud, yeah.
Anyway, Peter, one more technical detail. How do you establish the IBGP sessions to the controller? Is it an out-of-band network so you don't need routing over it? Or how do you pass the routes for the next hops?
This was a big controversial topic. For data center, the best way to establish session is actually in-band. Because the cluster topology has so many parallel paths, it's much more resilient to run this in-band. And the thing is, if somehow you lose a connection to a device, or from the controller perspective, the controller simply declares this graph vertex as having like infinite cost around it, right? It simply bypasses this device. So it doesn't create any inconsistencies in the decision plane, so there's no routing loops that form. So we do peer in-band only. And mostly because, well, the other reason is that nobody kind of allows you to form BGP session over management subnet on most switches because it's separate, normally separate VRF, and you can rerun BGP there. It's a, well, just different separation of logic in the switches. But in-band works perfectly.
Yeah, and nobody complains if you establish IBGP sessions between eBGP next hop, well, eBGP prefixes.
Yes, perfectly. Yes, this works. This basically works fine. Let's say the way it works, every time is a loopback. You inject the loopback in BGP, and ta-da, you peer to all these guys, right? A few thousand peering sessions on the controller side, right? It's pretty straightforward and simple. Let's talk about the destination-based forwarding. Well, since the days of MPLS-TE and just TE in general, which is essentially source routing, we've been thinking that destination-based forwarding cannot achieve the same level of traffic engineering, right? Accuracy or whatever.
Although, well, you have the fish problem.
Well, true, but most of our networks are more complex than simple fish topology. And there is a lot of research going on from early 2000s on how you can do traffic engineering by changing the IGP weights or using multi topology routing. So the truth is, in a topology which is realistic enough, you can always achieve traffic engineering goals with pretty much decent utilization, let's say over 80%, 90% utilization, using just either IGP link cost manipulation or multi topology routing. And there's a bunch of research papers on this topic, and Caridan has, let's say, this option where you can manipulate IGP weights in the actual OSP or whatever.
And that looks great.
Yes, and you can apply the same logic here, right? Let's say in data center, normally you don't need traffic engineering, of course, because it's all class, it's all equal cost multipath. It's very load balanced by the nature of a design. You can deploy this BGP controller in a, let's say, partial mesh topology, more generic one. And we didn't try this, but in theory, you can achieve the traffic engineering goals there once you know the demand metrics. And you may actually adjust the weights and prefixes and all this stuff using the controller only. So in theory, you can do the same traffic engineering using destination-only forwarding. So no MPLS, sorry, no source routing.
That's fine.
It still works, right? didn't try this, right? Currently focuses on data center, but I look into this, perfectly possible to achieve this. I did this in the lab setups. You can engineer traffic, but it's just mostly a matter of preference. The thing is, traditional approach is still using the big boxes, MPLS, TE, RSVP, and all this machinery. And of course, no one's going to break this from immediately just for the sake of new technologies, because core routing is much more a sensitive topic where it can't just move things around easily.
Right. And that goes back to the whole idea of, well, I don't know it, so I don't want to learn it, which is that, you know, I see people actually deploying MPLS, MPLS-TE for problems that could be solved in a simpler way, but because they know and because that's common stuff, right? And so they're actually adding complexity sometimes. I think we sometimes add complexity. I don't necessarily want to use MPLS-TE because my co-speaker at Cisco Live, you know, Eric Osborne, is going to get mad at me about it. But in general, you know, sometimes we choose complex topologies or complex tools because we know them, when there's a simpler tool that we don't know. And we think, you know, we just get in this kind of we're kind of frozen, right? We're kind of like, we know these tools, we're going to use them, even though there might be a simpler tool out there. And I think that's actually kind of a bad part of the networking industry right now.
You mean the whole inertia and just the whole incumbent stuff? Yeah. Well, yeah. I guess this is life in general. So life in general, how it is.
So Russ, you're saying we're actually threading the nails so that they look like screws?
There you go. And we call it less complex. I don't know.
Yes.
Let me guess, camera is a dangerous tool, you know.
But the whole complexity story is interesting because, so right now, I don't know of any approach which tries to compare software complexity of different, let's say, ASN implementations. Well, simply because there is no uniform software complexity metrics. There's a bunch of course different metrics like security complexity, lines of code, different stuff. There is no way to sit down and think, okay, is this new stuff simpler than the previous one? How would you compare them, right? Simply in the software complexity or operational complexity. Operationally, of course, every new stuff is always dangerous. But the whole bet is sometimes that you hope to move to a simpler designs and simpler software, that hoping that after some learning time, people will be happy with that, right? Happier with that, and that you will have less operational issues. But the transition path is always dangerous, right? Say transitioning from technology A to technology B, if there's a disruption step in between, is always very scary. And this is why basically BGP came in, because we can always do a very soft transition, overlay BGP. If it breaks, we shut it down, we fix something, we run this over again, and let people learn new technology in coexistence with the old one. And of course, keep them both, because we do different things. Say, in-band BGP does its own thing, like Russ said, and overlay stuff does what you want and when you want. And when you don't want it, it just does nothing for you, right? This was, let's say, the thinking behind this this approach.
Yeah, and what I really love about your approach is that you didn't reinvent a single wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah.
So link management, connectivity management, session management, information distribution mechanism, everything is already there. You reused what has been there.
Exactly.
You didn't try to reinvent the wheel. You just added what you needed. So I love it.
Yes, it looks less sexy, of course. No one's going to buy this.
Well, like it will not buy you many two-column articles.
Yeah, it doesn't have OpenFlow or Plum Grid or any other fancy words in it. You just said BGP, and when people see BGP, they think, oh, it's ISP stuff again. Oh, God. And we just tend to just close the page and the article.
Well, I guess that raises a bit of a point for me, is I understand the way you put it together, and I agree with Ivan that what you've done is take all of the existing pieces of technology and just put together in a different way, mm-hmm. that would be regarded as not vendor supported by some people. So the vendors
He's not using anything that wouldn't be supported.
Yeah, but the vendors wouldn't support it as a design. It's not an approved or a validated design, is what I'm saying.
I was going to say, when I was in Tactor Escalation, I would have supported this. I don't see anything strange about it.
He's not doing anything that wouldn't be,
normal for BGP.
Trust me, I've worked on four large-scale data center designs in the last 2 years, and if they didn't comply to the CVD-3.0 template that a company wouldn't, or the appropriate vendor template for data center design that they had to sign off by their consulting team, it wasn't done.
That's very true for enterprises, I would say. For large companies like Facebook, Microsoft, whoever, the story is very different. I mean, no one dictates you right what to do. It's kind of vice versa. So it's a very different environment. I agree.
Yeah. Which brings me to the point, how did you convince the people around you that this was workable, that it would scale? And then how did you test and prove this out to say this was going to work? What did you have to go through to prove that this design, isn't something normally done, was actually going to be acceptable?
So that's throw away the political part of Microsoft, because there's a lot of internal cooking and politics as in every big company. The project lifecycle starts with basically idea and idea socialization. People say, well, it might work, maybe. You get some buy-offs from mostly operational people. And the good news is that our team does everything from design to operations. So in this sense, it's much easier to convince yourselves, right? If it makes sense, we just do it. So there is no strong separation between architecture, implementation, and operational teams. We do everything. And so if it makes sense to the folks in your team, people just agree to that and you deploy the stuff. Of course, you start in the lab, you showcase, you have a test plan, you measure the different fault scenarios, stress tests, see if things work. And the great, great news about this one, you can deploy this in production immediately and switch it off if something goes wrong. And it's very non-intrusive. If, as I said, if there is no difference from the BGP in band decision, there is no change being pushed. So let's say you only use for maintenance. So you deploy this once. Let's try to see what happens if we overload this device. Basically, we declare overload bit on this device in the BGP SDN state. Traffic moves away. You do your stuff. You bring traffic back, mm-hmm. right? So for operational folks, it's very easy to sell. It doesn't require much changes. It could be turned off easily. And it's only used when you need it.
Peter, this SDN stuff, I totally agree with you, is really incremental and you can turn it off at any moment. But how did you deploy the original BGP only data center? Was it the greenfield stuff or did you have to implement it over an existing routing protocol?
So it was mostly greenfield, right?
Lucky you.
Yes, I agree. It's a very great stuff is that, say, Microsoft currently deploys a lot of stuff. There's a lot of growth and capacity deployment is a huge bet on this cloud infrastructure. So for us, okay, there is like always something new coming up. Let's try it there. And once you deploy like a few thousand devices, you run your scripts, they initialize the boxes, drop configurations, and stuff starts working. It's kind of amazing because it works in the lab for maybe like 20 devices, then goes to production for 2,000 devices. It's a very different feeling, much more, let's say, stress. And the main challenge to deploy this stuff isn't protocols. BGP is very simple. It's physical layer issues. Troubleshooting the fiber links and just the whole process with people, between people on site and people remote. BGP was the easiest part. Right. You turn it on, drop a configuration of the box. So of course it's not been manually, it's all pre-generated for devices. You upload configuration, BGP sessions fly up, come up. And
so how do you provision those switches? Do you use Puppet or Chef, or have you got your own custom sort of platforms for that?
Microsoft always has custom platform for everything. So there's a system known as Autopilot. You can find this. I was a few papers on the web. Autopilot is the whole software system that manages software deployment, hardware lifecycle, and monitoring for the data centers at Microsoft. And this one takes care of provisioning and monitoring of network switches as well. So it does the config generation, the box boots up, pulls down the configuration, auto-configures, and things start just working from that moment on. But it's a part of a single platform called Autopilot. And the difference between, let's say, Chef, Puppet, and Autopilot is that Chef and Puppet are mostly systems to deploy something and manage changes. Autopilot is a system that does recovery as well. So it tracks the health of every device and takes the repair action when something breaks. Let's say if your server has some faults, let's say there's a watchdog running on the server, declares there's an issue on the machine, you run simple operations such as re-image, reboot, or replace, and it's all done automatically. And this is also in the paper. This is, let's say, kind of old concept called recovery-oriented computing, when the system kind of takes care of itself automatically, repairs itself, and repair actions are always very simple. It's not like you try to investigate. It's the thing at this scale, they have hundreds of thousands of servers, there's no time to investigate any issue. The attempt is to let the system apply a very simple set of actions to repair something. If it doesn't work, you just mark this machine as bad and put it on the RMA queue for replacement, right?
That's the other side of this, is that some parts of this design are built for scale, where you have hundreds of thousands of physical servers or virtual servers.
Oh, physical.
Physical, right?
Yes.
So you can just, and at the layer above the network, the servers self-recover. So you can exhaust, if you've got a failed networking device or a failed path, it wouldn't be a path. I mean, if you lose a port, it's not going to matter much, but you just put it in the queue to be replaced at some point in the future, I guess.
Right.
But if the device is showing signs of failing or throwing error messages, it's easier just to take it out of service by shutting down all the ports or something like that. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. It's much easier to take simple repair action rather than trying to investigate every case, because it's just simply unbearable.
By the way, another technical detail. We were talking previously about layer 3 going all the way down to the top of rack switch.
Right.
Does that mean that you have servers that are single homes to a single switch?
Yes. In a web scale environments, it's always single homed, simply because it's too expensive to have two NICs and two ports. It just doubles the cost of a port, right? Okay. Applications are just designed such that server fails, it's always striped across multiple racks or multiple servers. So every application is by design distributed and aware of a topology.
And so you're using RESTful interfaces as well into those applications, right?
Well, there's a bunch of interfaces, actually. REST is just one of them, right? But the complexity of APIs is a different story because search engine consists of thousands of different small applications, big and small applications. Like there's a big one for indexing. There's a bunch of small ones to give you the ads, the search results, additional hints, and all this stuff. And everything, all this works together with special load balancing systems that kind of collect and federate all the requests. And it's pretty complex, to be honest. It's another huge, huge topic to talk about, just design of search engines.
So if you've only got a single interface for the network, does that mean they're using, are they using the Ethernet network for storage too?
Oh, yes. It's too, let's say, expensive to have separate storage network, right? The whole idea at this scale is unification, right? So it's always IP, Ethernet, the cheapest commodity thing you can find, right? It's the same, well, basically, Google started this idea like maybe a while ago. Commodity servers, commodity infrastructure, Ethernet only. And the storage is also kind of unique. Let's say you have, just like, say, in the Google file system, there's similar stuff here as well. A file system takes care of distributed storage, and there is no fiber channel and any other storage technologies. Block-driven storage protocols. Nothing like this.
Yeah, are you that amount of fiber channel, I don't think you could even build a fiber channel network that large.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a very story about fiber channel. Plus, it's just too expensive at this scale. It's all about the economies of scale. Try to buy as much of stuff as you can of the same SKU, of the same design, so it's super cheap at volume.
Yeah, I guess I was more thinking for people who are listening, you know, perhaps some of it, I mean, for the people who perhaps aren't quite at the same level that, you know, I would like to think I'm at, but you guys are at, you know, that's the thing, is that it's all about Ethernet, storage over Ethernet, network over Ethernet. All the links between the switches are all slash 31s.
No. So basically, if it's top of rack, it could be one VLAN, right?
Yeah.
Just for simplicity, just to conserve some addresses. Mm-hmm. It's all, let's say, auto configuration via DHCP, all this usual stuff. But there is no span tree, of course. There is no, like, any loops at layer two. It's a very simple top of rack connection, single home to a server. Mm-hmm. All the storage.
So everything, all the uplinks towards the core are all IP rooted?
Oh, yes, of course.
The VLANs towards the servers. There might be VLAN towards the servers, which is the servers might share a VLAN or two or three. But
you may use VLAN just to group the local ports in one subnet, but that's it. There is no VLAN spanning multiple switches because this is not needed. All the applications are, let's say, in many senses, are network aware. They know how to find their neighbors and all this stuff. So that's pretty much unnecessary to have any VLAN spanning, to have a single domain. And as for storage, it's slightly non-Zen talk, but storage, there's always direct attached storage, right? Always direct hard drives. And everything else is implemented above it as a special storage implementation as a file system, normally a special file system, right? Mm. It's not like you have a virtual hard drive split across multiple machines. It's always custom implementation of a file system. If you look on the Google file system implementation, it's very it just outlines the idea of how things work in the web scale applications.
Yeah, that's the trick there, is that you've got to have a different method of storage.
Mm-hmm.
And access as well. Yeah. So the read write. So as you say, the applications are actually striped across multiple servers. So the loss of one server doesn't mean an application goes down.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of the things about cloud data centers that I'm learning, is that you actually got to stop focusing on the machine or on the operating system. You've got to start focusing on the application and finding ways for the application to work in such a way that even if that virtual machine was turned off, if that operating system flames out because there's a physical server underneath that dies or the switch dies, the application just keeps going somewhere else.
Right, but it's mostly about application design. If you don't design the application properly, let's say it's the difference between platform as a service and infrastructure as a service. People often say, okay, I got virtual machine, it's going to be reliable, it's never going to fail, right?
Mm.
And of course, it's not this way. It's always going to fail at some point of time. And you have, if you want to have an application which is resilient, you have to write it properly. Anyways, so back to BGP SDN. You folks have any other questions? As I said, I'm trying to put together a draft, and there's also Nanox slides that I sent you the link to, which outlines some diagrams and present the controller architecture and all this stuff in more details. So this gives people probably a better reference of how things work. I can't publish the source code for legal reasons, but it's really easy to implement this stuff on your own. Once you get the idea, it takes maybe a week max to implement, troubleshoot this, and get it working.
And the only question that I had regarding it was other use cases that you can envision, even if it's not directly applicable to your environment.
Oh, yeah. So the as usual, normally for it's just changing the routing, right? And the way you change routing, okay, is traffic engineering. It's a major use case, right? You can do traffic engineering on a non-uniform network using destination-based forwarding, right? And if you take, let's say, for example, AIGP draft, right? AIGP is an attempt to kind of overlay IGP metric on multiple BGP SNs. You can do similar stuff using this approach as well, for example. Although AIGP was mostly for like option C VPNs, PLS VPNs, you can use the same method there. For data center, the major use cases were to do traffic drains from devices and implement some sort of traffic engineering in case when you have some outages, right? When a few switches fail and you have massive congestion because of equal cost oblivious routing, you can recalculate the traffic matrix weights and push traffic in different directions to bypass the hotspot. So this was our use case, is fixing the network under congestion, because networks do fail, links kind of go down, links get errors, you shut them down, and this creates congestions when you run very intense compute traffic in the data center. So the other use case was decongesting the network by applying non-shortest path routing logic from a controller. So that was the other major use case. What was else? Well, yes, that's it. Basically, everything you can think about routing, right, you can do this using controller. So if you have some ideas, I want to change routing in this way, using just simple RESTful call to the controller, there you go, right? Very easy. And it already presents an abstraction that is simple enough to play with, right? And you don't have to implement extra additional logic on top of it, your own complex application making decisions. You may just need to say no traffic matrix to change the weights in the network.
I was just thinking about one other thing, because you can insert any prefix.
Yes.
You could actually deaggregate the subnets and push traffic for different servers over different links using host routing.
Of course. So basically what you can do is give an application owner a different view of a topology if they want, right? So they can say, okay, my traffic should take only these paths. Another guy decides to use the other paths. And of course, the access control on the controller only limits them to deaggregate only their own prefixes. And the deaggregation idea also could be used for traffic engineering, right? If you want to have more granular engineering, you split these prefixes into smaller subnets, and this gives you much more flexibility in moving these prefixes around and mapping them to different topologies, and gives you much more granular control of traffic engineering goals. But it's just, you know, everything you can think of with a destination-based forwarding, just look at all the research papers have been written since year 2000 or whatever. It's all there. There's a lot of stuff you can do for traffic engineering. Because the whole purpose of traffic routing is satisfying some constraints and achieve some optimization goals, right? So think of your, basically, what's my goal for this traffic, for moving this traffic from X to Y? And what are the constraints and how we can solve them using this controller? It's basically OpenFlow Lite as a code. OpenFlow using only destination-based forwarding and using BGP as a control link.
So effectively, you could apply everything that the academics were doing on destination-based forwarding and throw away all the fancy part where they're inventing new protocols and what else, and just implement the part that actually makes sense.
Yes. I like academia because they have some awesome ideas, some really crazy. Say we have MSR here. MSR guys amazingly smart. Some of the ideas they have are amazing, but absolutely impractical, unfortunately. But you can take things that are interesting, see some algorithms for optimization, and implement them here using BGP to program the data plane, or sorry, the routing plane, whatever. It's just up to your imagination and up to what you want. As I said, in data center, you don't have super many use cases because DC fabric is very uniform and simple by design. But if you try to project this to more general topologies, you get much more use cases in terms of traffic engineering. It's not very fancy. It's not like you get some super cool publication at SIGCOM saying, hey, I did this awesome open flow implementation. Let's say, actually, if you guys care, with Google's paper at SIGCOM just this month, where we talk about the B4, which is their open flow WAN routing design. It's kind of interesting because it goes over much more details than previously they had published anywhere. But you can do kind of the same things using BGP only if you're lucky enough to have this opportunity. Currently, I'm just focused on data center. Going beyond is, let's say, much more difficult, as we discussed, so because people are not used to doing things this way.
Well, I think that's probably a good place for us to close off the podcast right there. Now, there is a presentation that you did at NANOG.
Yes.
I just saw the slides. I started to look at them, and it looks quite lengthy. So I'm looking forward to reading that and reviewing this solution in more detail. It sounds pretty pretty neat. Now, and the IETF draft that you're working on, do you have an expectation about when that's going to be published?
Next week. So I think it's about 20% left to finish. I hope I can finish this next week. Just send you the link, probably over this weekend.
Sure. And next week, for those that are listening on delayed broadcast here at the Packet Pushers Worldwide Global Network, that's probably going to be middle to late July is what we're talking about when that would have been published. You'll be able to see that. Well, to close up the show, let's go around the table again. And if you guys have anything specific you'd like to plug, like a blog or your Twitter handle or a book that you're working on or something, please do that. And let us know what big projects you're working on this week. Let's start with Russ.
Oh, cool. I am finishing up The Art of Network Architecture. I have two more books already in the hopper with Cisco Press in my spare time. Mm-hmm. just working on some CLOS and some spine and leaf stuff this week, hopefully.
Very good. And Ivan, is it? I know it's technically Ivan Peplniak, and I've been trying to make myself say that, and
it's
still weird. but he's Ivan, there's this Petter and Peter is easier, so just call me that. Okay, I'm a stupid American. I can't get any of them right. So Ivan, go for it.
So by the way, I have great news. I finally managed to rename my blog, so it's now blog.ipspace.net, finally.
Yep.
Apart from that, I'm trying to be on vacation, but I'm not. I got pulled into all sorts of interesting projects. And I'm blogging about some of the things that happen in those projects, of course, without mentioning any names, at blog.ipspace.net.
Yeah, which I would assume most of the listeners to Packet Pushers are very aware of Ivan's blog and follow it. And if not, please make an effort to do that, blog.ipspace.net, because Ivan gets very technical with a lot of very complex solutions and breaks them down into their component parts and explains how they work and what they're good for and or what they're not good for and what his opinion is. So there's very insightful reading. It's an education in and of itself following Ivan's blog. So please make the effort to follow that. And then Peter.
All right, guys. So for me, this week is almost over Friday, which means a weekend of more work, which is great news for me. I'm trying to currently finish this draft on BGP SDN. That's my next step. And also playing with this BGP SDN in production right now, deploying a few things, doing some optimization. And hopefully next week, the draft will be ready. There's also a few other problems which I try to kind of solve in code right now. So for me, it's mostly trying to spend less time in meetings and more time writing code.
Meetings have that way of sucking productivity time away. You can't get anything done because you're too busy talking about the work that you got to do.
Oh, yeah. Ethan, I saw a cartoon once. A girl was saying, You want me to develop people skills? Why do you think I decided to work with computers in the first place? Exactly right. Nice.
And then Mr. Farrow, thanks as always for being here as our leader and all of that good stuff. And you put your voice to the test today, but you made it through.
Yeah, I'm not dead yet. So this week for me is pushing through on the in the last phases of the OpenFlow book. So I'm actually at home recovering, so I actually have time off from the day job. So I'm actually hoping to really grind out the last of that and get that published finally. I'm actually weirdly writing the exact opposite of what we talked about today. I've spent today researching internal switch architectures and arguing over what actually happens to a packet inside of a switch, and then writing a chapter on what's sort of the packet pathway when it comes in on a port before it gets out the other side. It's been an educational experience. So I learned a lot from writing this book, I must say. But as always, you can find me on my blog at etherealmind.com. You can find me on the Twitter as etherealmind. I also now have a Facebook page where, if that's your poison, you can follow me there. And I'm forwarding my data into that to advise people what's going on. Also on Google+.
I am Ethan Banks at EC Banks on Twitter, or you can read my blog, ethancbanks.com, or my blog at Network Computing. And this week, I am finishing up an SDN report for, I think it's going to be published in Information Week. It is a report that is taken from survey data that really kind of says the state of SDN in the industry. It's kind of a high-level report, not overly technical, but is really kind of a encapsulation of where SDN sits from a broad market perspective. The Packet Pushers podcast, our hub site is packetpushers.net. You can follow us there. Our RSS feeds are up there. We are on iTunes. We are on Facebook. We are on Google+. And we have a LinkedIn group as well. We have an IRC channel on freenode.net, irc.freenode.net, and go to the Packet Pushers channel. You'll find a whole bunch of fellow nerds hanging around in there and talking about packety things. I'm looking at the chat window right now where someone has pasted in what looks like a NetFlow entry he's looking for diagnosis of. Good stuff. Good stuff. We hope to see you there. If you have any questions about this show, you can email us, packetpushers@gmail.com. And remember that too much networking would never be enough.